Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
Ecuador's president says billions of dollars will be needed to help the country rebuild from the powerful earthquake last Saturday. The earthquake killed at least 413 people and injured more than 2,500. Thousands of people were left homeless. President Rafael Correa visited the northeastern town of Puerto Viejo Monday to see some of the damage. Puerto Viejo and the nearby cities of Manta and Pedernales were among the areas that suffered the greatest damage in the earthquake. The government says it will take loans from several international organizations, including the World Bank, to pay for its rescue and recovery efforts. Ecuador is a member of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. The economy of the small South American country is in recession because of low oil prices on international markets. A United States government agency announced Tuesday that it will send two teams to Ecuador. The U.S. Agency for International Development will deploy one team to assist the government by studying the country's damage and needs. A second team will work with the United Nations to help organize international rescue activities. USAID has promised to donate at least $100,000 for supplies. The UN Children's Fund reported Tuesday that the earthquake damaged 119 schools, affecting at least 150,000 children. Search and rescue crews have launched an effort to find survivors trapped in the wreckage of buildings destroyed in the earthquake. Three people were rescued from the wreckage of a shopping center in Manta after being trapped for 32 hours. Thousands of soldiers and police have been deployed throughout Ecuador to provide temporary shelters and food. And aid workers from many nations, including Spain, Peru, Cuba, Bolivia, and Venezuela, have arrived to help.
Next, Christopher Jones Cruz tells us how some religious leaders feel about the subject of climate change.
More than 200 religious leaders say they support the climate change agreement negotiated in Paris last year and want it to be put into effect quickly. This Friday, Earth Day, world leaders will sign the agreement at United Nations headquarters in New York City. The religious leaders joined in prayer Monday at a religious center at the UN. They released a statement that urged countries to quickly sign, approve, and enforce the Paris Climate Agreement. The statement was sent to the General Assembly President to be given to UN member states. The agreement will take effect after 55 countries, representing at least 55% of total greenhouse emissions, have approved the treaty. Many studies have linked carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases to climate change. Fletcher Harper is an Episcopalian clergyman. He also leads a coalition of different religious groups called Green Faith. Green Faith helped organize the gathering of religious leaders at the UN. Harper says the leaders' campaign has the support of almost 5,000 people and 90 groups worldwide.
The statement reflects that we must regard the earth as a gift, not just as a commodity that can be bought or sold, but as a gift that must be cherished and protected, not only for short-term economic gain, but for the long-term protection of life. These are fundamental moral and religious values that are shared by traditions across the world.
Kiran Bali leads the United Religions Initiative, an interfaith group that works in 94 countries.
For many of us, we are seeing the problem across the world: drought, food shortages, extinction of species. I feel that this is a human and a spiritual failure. And I'm here to ask for everybody to unite, to come together as people of faith who believe in the values of oneness and respect, environmental stewardship, and really save our planet, save our earth.
Fletcher Harper believes religious leaders can have an influence on the climate policies and actions of many countries.
We have a chance to transform the cultures of the world, and by transforming the cultures, transform politics, so that government leaders understand that they absolutely must take dramatic action on climate change now.
I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Earlier this week, an emergency forced a Chinese aircraft to land on an island in the South China Sea. Pete Musto has the story.
China says a military airplane landed on one of the country's man-made islands earlier this week in the South China Sea. The plane was on patrol Sunday when it received an emergency call to land on Fiery Cross Reef, Chinese media reported. It said the plane was told to remove three construction workers who were injured. The workers were flown to Hainan Island, where they received medical treatment. The man-made island has a 3,000-meter-long runway for aircraft. Construction workers completed the runway last year. Test flights by commercial airlines started in January. Earlier this month, U.S. Secretary of Defense Ash Carter said the United States has serious concerns about China's actions in the South China Sea. He said that other Asian countries have expressed their concerns about China's actions, both publicly and privately, to U.S. officials. China claims much of the South China Sea. Several other nations, including the Philippines and Vietnam, have competing claims. I'm Pete Musto.
The United States Supreme Court faces a decision concerning immigration. Kathleen Strzok tells us more.
About 10 million undocumented immigrants live in the United States. Because they are not registered with authorities, undocumented immigrants often hide from the government. For example, they do not pay taxes, and they cannot apply for driver's licenses, jobs that require a work permit, or loans to buy houses. If they are discovered, undocumented immigrants can be deported, in other words, sent back to their home countries. But this week, the U.S. Supreme Court is considering whether to allow some undocumented immigrants to stay for a limited period and apply to work legally. The court's decision will affect only undocumented immigrants who meet three criteria: those who have not been found guilty of a crime, those who have been in the U.S. for the past 5 years or more, and those who have a child who was born here or lives here legally. About 4 million undocumented immigrants meet those criteria. The Supreme Court will announce its decision this summer, probably in June. The case revolves around a program called DAPA. It stands for Deferred Action for Parents of Americans and Lawful Permanent Residents. President Barack Obama approved the program 2 years ago. One of the goals of the program was to keep families together. It also aimed to bring more people into legal work. People who support DAPA say the program can greatly reduce the fear undocumented immigrants feel. A 6-year-old girl named Sophie Cruz spoke outside the Supreme Court building. She was born in the U.S., but her parents are here without documents. That means the government can force her parents to leave the country and their daughter at any time. I ask the judges to protect us children and all immigrants, Sophie Cruz said. A representative from a teachers group also spoke. Cesar Moreno Perez said teachers know what happens when children come to school with fear. Fear that their parents are not going to be home. Fear for themselves that they are going to be picked up on their way home. If the Supreme Court decides the DAPA program is legal, the government will protect approved undocumented immigrants. Those immigrants will receive a Social Security card, permission to work in the U.S., and a promise that they will not be forced to leave for 3 years. At the end of 3 years, approved immigrants may apply again for the program. Lawyers arguing against DAPA say the program is not legal. President Obama approved DAPA, but Congress never agreed to it. Under the U.S. Constitution, Congress usually makes the laws, and the president's administration makes sure the laws are followed. One of the Supreme Court justices, Anthony Kennedy, said of the DAPA program, "The president is setting policy and Congress is executing it. It seems upside down." However, the Constitution does allow the president to make an executive order. Those orders have the force of law, but they do not have to be approved by Congress. Future presidents may change an executive order. President Obama said he approved DAPA because Congress has failed to improve the U.S. immigration system. The state of Texas, along with 25 other states, are challenging Obama's executive order in the Supreme Court. They say Obama does not have the power to do so much to change the country's immigration laws. Lower courts have agreed with the challengers. DAPA is currently frozen or not active because previous judges have decided it is not legal. The Supreme Court includes 9 justices. However, 1 justice recently died, leaving 8 people on the court. As a result, the DAPA case could end in a 4-4 tie. A tie is especially possible because 4 justices usually follow a more liberal way of thinking, and 4 usually follow a more conservative way of thinking. If the case ends in a tie, the DAPA program will remain frozen, and undocumented immigrants will continue to risk being deported. The Supreme Court could also decide not to decide. In other words, they could say that Texas and the other states do not have the right to sue in federal court. If the Supreme Court throws out the case, Americans and politicians will have made no further progress on the question of undocumented immigrations. I'm Kathleen Strzok.
A Vietnamese-American writer has won a highly prized award for his first book. Katie Weaver has the story.
A first-time novelist, Viet Thanh Nguyen, has won the 2016 Pulitzer Prize for Fiction. He won the prize for his book, The Sympathizer. The Pulitzer judges described Nguyen's book as an immigrant's story told through the voice of a man of two minds and two countries. The book is set in both Vietnam, where the author was born, and the United States, where he was raised. Critics have praised The Sympathizer as an exciting spy story with emotional depth and humor. It tells about a group of South Vietnamese Army officers who escaped to the United States at the end of the Vietnam War. Among them is a captain who is secretly loyal to the Viet Cong. He reports to Viet Cong officials about the group and their lives in Los Angeles. Nguyen told the Los Angeles Times that The Sympathizer is a confession from one Vietnamese to another. Nguyen came to the United States with his family in 1975, when he was very young. They lived for several years in a refugee camp in Pennsylvania. They settled in San Jose, California. Nguyen studied at the University of California, Berkeley, where he earned a doctorate in English. Nguyen is now a professor of English and American Studies and Ethnicity at the University of Southern California. He has published 3 nonfiction books and some short stories. The writer told the LA Times that it was important to him when writers Toni Morrison and Jhumpa Lahiri won Pulitzers. He called their wins landmarks for writers of color and Asian American writers. Nguyen said Morrison's work influenced his choice to write for, in his words, people who are intimate to me, and not to think that I was writing for a white audience first. He told the University of Southern California News, "I see myself as part of a larger movement of writers of color, of Asian American writers, who have collectively been trying so hard to bring different voices and perspectives to American audiences, and have often felt overlooked or marginalized in different ways." I'm Katie Weaver.
After their small boat turned over, 3 men swam to a small island in the Pacific Ocean. They used the leaves and branches of palm trees
to spell the word help, hoping someone could see them. Just like in a movie, a U.S. Navy airplane spotted the castaways on a small island in Micronesia a week later. The island is close to Guam, a U.S. territory in the Pacific. The flight crew searching for the men used a camera that can read heat signals to discover that they might be on the island. The men had started a fire, hoping to be found. The pilot flew around the island and discovered the word spelled on the beach. When the plane was close enough, the men ran out from some trees and started waving their orange life vests. The plane flew close to the ground more than once and tipped its wings to show the men it knew they were there. The crew also threw a smoke signal into the water. The Navy airplane reported the castaways' location to the U.S. Coast Guard, and a boat from a nearby island left to pick the men up. Lieutenant Commander John Harkins said he and his crew celebrated when they found the men, because they did not think they would find them. The Associated Press News Service reports, "The men arrived home safely and were not injured." I'm Dan Friedel.
This is What's Trending Today. For the first time in history, a woman gymnast from India will compete at the Olympics. Deepa Karmakar won rights to compete in the 2016 Summer Olympic Games during a test event last weekend. The test event was held in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. The games officially open in Rio on August 5th. Karmakar is 22 years old. She is from the Indian state of Tripura. She qualified for the Olympics by finishing among the top 33 individual gymnasts at the test event. Karmakar is the first gymnast from India, male or female, to reach the Olympics in more than 50 years. Her historic performance has made her a trending topic on Facebook and Twitter. Supporters on social media praised and congratulated her. Even Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi spoke about Karmakar's performance. Speaking on Tuesday, Modi said, "Deepa has made India proud and brought glory to its name. First time a daughter from the country has been selected in gymnastics." Also during the test event, the women's gymnastics team from Romania failed to qualify to the Rio Olympics. Romania placed 7th at the test event's team competition. Only the top 4 teams at the event qualified to the Olympics. 8 other teams qualified to the Olympics at last year's World Championships. Romania has won a medal in team gymnastics in every Olympics since 1976. That was the year Romanian Nadia Comăneci received the first perfect 10 in Olympic history. And that's What's Trending Today.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Education Report. Over the last few weeks, we discussed a method for teaching debate to English learners. Debate is a valuable way to practice communicating. It can also bring long-lasting rewards outside the classroom, especially for people working with Western businesses. The main activity of debate is presenting one's opinion and supporting it with evidence, such as statistics or facts. It is a way of persuasive communication, of making someone believe
what you are saying. Charles Le Beau helped create the discover debate method. He says debate is important to understanding how people communicate in Western business. Successful debaters learn how to give their opinion, reasons, and support.
We're trying to develop a kind of thinking or an approach to discussion and how to interact with someone else's opinion, rather than just brush their opinion aside and say, well, yes, but this is what I think.
Debate skills are also important in selling a product, he says. In that situation, the judges are the customers.
So on Monday, for example, one company may come in and present their case to the customer. And they'll make as strong a case as they can. On Tuesday, the next day, another company will come in and present their case to the customer. Usually, the party that could present the strongest case wins.
He adds that people use persuasive communication in meetings, too. Three or four people may present ideas. Then they attack or support each other's arguments.
I think this way of approaching, presenting opinions and responding to opinions is very important for English speaking. In Japan, we don't really do that. We don't respond to a person point by point. In English-style meetings, we do that, and Japanese participants need to do that in an English-style meeting in order to be successful.
Debate also strengthens critical thinking. In other words, it helps students learn to ask questions and try to understand someone's reasons and evidence. Mr. Le Beau points out that successful debaters learn to listen carefully to what other people are saying. Then, they look for the weak points in someone else's opinion or argument. He says debate teaches a systematic way of questioning. Successful debaters also learn to think from someone else's point of view. Mr. Le Beau says debate can help broaden the mind.
There is an expression in English, don't criticize another person until you have walked in their shoes. I think the wonderful thing about debate is it puts us in another person's shoes.
For example, students in a debate might argue the topic, soccer is a better sport than baseball. A student may have to argue in favor of soccer, even if he or she does not really think soccer is better than baseball. But the student will have to explain why soccer is an interesting sport and present the viewpoint of soccer fans. The exercise will offer a way of thinking the student may not have normally had. Debate can improve one's thinking and language so much that it brings benefits to a student's life and career. Professor Le Beau tells a story about teaching debate to new employees at Toshiba. One young woman came up and asked, "Do you remember me?" She had been his student in a debate and presentation class at her university. She said the class improved her English skills so much that she had been able to get a good job in the company. She is living evidence of the benefits of learning to debate. I'm Jill Robbins.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.